Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
So every great story starts with a story, a lead, right? Yep. So I'm from a small town in Indiana called Covington, whole 2,400 people. Mm-hmm. And in 1979, we went through a tornado. I was five. My brother was maybe 18 months old. It went about a half mile, maybe a quarter mile from my home. We had pretty significant damage. But I vividly remember, we didn't have a basement. So we ran to an interior closet with my mom and the dog.
Okay.
And we're hiding there, and the storm comes through. My mom saw the funnel cloud. That's what started all of this.
Oh, really?
So we're hiding in the closet, and then, you know, it passes by, and then you go outside and you look at the aftermath of the storm. And my city was without power for more than a week. Actually, I think it was closer to 2 weeks. We had trees down in the yard. We had a tree at a 45-degree angle leaning towards our house, so we couldn't sleep in our bedrooms, because that's what the tree was aimed at. We had to sleep on the floor in the living room with sleeping bags. Fortunately,
which is kind of fun for kids.
It's kind of fun for kids. For my mom, not so much.
No.
And my dad was out of town working because his job, he was usually gone every other day. So we weren't prepared to deal with this other than having sleeping bags and, you know, enough food for a couple days.
Yeah. So on the flip side, I grew up on a farm, so we were used to kind of living without for periods of time because we weren't very close to the grocery store and things like that. So I also had few childhood memories of some major storms that came through, and
mom waking
us up in the middle of the night for tornado warnings, dragging us down into the basement. And
you had a well for water?
Then? We did, yep.
Okay.
Yep, we did. And we had a basement sort of root cellar type of place that mom would drag all four of us down there in the middle of the night and terrified. Again, you'd walk outside. Like you said, trees are everywhere.
Could you get to the cellar from inside your house,
or did
you have to go outside and go through the wind door?
It was in the house, so we could actually get, it wasn't like on the movie Twister where it's coming and you're trying to open the storm cellar, anything like that. No, we went right into the basement.
Okay.
So. Yep. And definitely snowstorms too. Like everyone remembers the 91 snowstorm.
Yeah.
So where we were snowed in for days.
I think people we take this for granted in the United States a lot. I think we just don't prepare personally the way that maybe you grew up on the farm, and these are things that you just lived because you had to. You weren't in the city.
Yeah, you were just, that was the way you did things,
right?
You know,
I think about, you know, the first major crisis that I worked, that was a crisis, was Hurricane Katrina back in 2005. And granted, the government perhaps did not do all of the things that they should have done, but at the same time, people were completely ill-equipped to deal with the fact that there was no response coming initially.
Right. On that personal level.
On that personal level.
How do I take care of myself and my neighbors?
Right. So today we talk, as a result of that, the federal government anyway launched the Ready campaign, which you can find those resources at ready.gov. But we think this is an interesting topic because as we're helping businesses and clients improve their resiliency, improve their preparedness, we often turn the conversation back to, this is going to start with your team. And as a company, as a business, reinforcing what you want the team to do personally, because if they can't take care of themselves and they can't take care of their families, or they're worried about their family, they're not coming to work.
Right. It always starts with people first, right?
Right.
Taking care of people first and taking care of yourself more than that first.
Right. So the Ready campaign teaches us three things. Have a kit. Have a 72-hour kit, because we think that 3 days is really the boundary by which you'll start to get help from federal, state, local government. To have a plan, to build a basic plan for your family, and then to practice that plan. And as a result of that plan, go back and take a look at your kit.
That's right. So maybe we break it down a little bit, those three different categories, and talk just a little bit about each of those.
Let's go into that. So yeah. FEMA talks about having a 72-hour emergency kit, and what needs to go in that kit.
Yeah. just looking at the top of the list here is obviously water, and second to that is food. And it makes me think, in my house, I always have an overstocked fridge. I mean, we don't have kids, but I always have an overstocked fridge and overstocked pantry. And it drives my husband crazy because he can never find anything.
But you grew up on a farm.
But I think that's where it came from. Yeah, exactly. I've always got something that I can come up with something to feed a whole crowd of people, even though it's just my husband.
Right.
Yeah.
It also, we also talk about some supplies, flashlights, first aid kit. I like to have flashlights, but I also like, I prefer to use the head lamp because if you, because then you can use both hands to do whatever as you're manipulating something or fixing something or trying to navigate, trying to help another person. Batteries, lots of batteries.
Always.
Yeah. Batteries are important.
And lights, flashlights, candles in multiple rooms. So let's say you can't get to, because like you said, there's a tree in your bedroom and that's where you keep the flashlights and the batteries. So it's probably a good idea to place them in various rooms of the house.
Maps, can openers for food, manual can openers for food.
First aid kit. This is something I always have because, again, I like to call myself a recovering medic from the Air Force. So I always have thought through what you would need in basic first aid situations.
Right.
And then some.
Yeah. So those are a lot of the basic things. We also recommend that you have some cash and that you have spare medication, over-the-counter medication, in addition to your prescription medications. And you can always talk to your doctor about, hey, I'm building an emergency kit and I want to have spare of whatever it is that you take. And most doctors will help you acquire that with a proper prescription.
Yep, spare fuel or propane or however you may be heating your house with, those types of things are good to have on hand. And back to water, I just briefly touched on at the beginning, but I think that's pretty important because if you think about what could happen to, let's say you're on city water, that water supply could go bad for whatever reason in the midst of a big storm, and you want to make sure that you can survive on what you have. So we always have gallons and bottles of water available, even though our city water, we drink that most of the time.
Right. And we're, and for water, we're talking about a gallon per person per day.
At least.
So it adds up pretty fast to be a pretty significant amount of water.
And if you're in a hotter climate, you might want to think about more than that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you want to get fancy and you've built this kit for your home, then you can start to think about what's the get home kit that I need to have in my vehicle, because I might be 50 miles from home when the disaster strikes and I need to get home or wherever it is that I'm meeting my family. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But you can think about a lot of the same kind of things. You need, you know, clothing in your vehicle for different climates and cold weather and spending the night outdoors. You might want a tarp and some rope to help you, you know, shelter from the rain. But you're going to want food and you're going to want water and probably a comfortable backpack to help you get from point A to back to home.
And I think the vehicle thing we're relatively good at here in Minnesota because we're used to traveling through snowstorms.
Right.
Yeah, where your best of intentions, maybe it's not bad, but you end up rolling right into the ditch and you need some of those basic items until you can get help your way.
So part two of personal preparedness is to have a plan that you develop with your family. And it starts with just getting access to information that you need to know about the disaster that could be coming. So that can be weather alerts, have a weather radio, subscribe to local city, county, state, and FEMA alerts so that you know about flooding, severe weather, hurricanes. I mean, you would think folks would know about these things, but you're surprised sometimes that who doesn't get emergency notifications.
Well, I think even aside from that, preparing yourself comes along with, I mean, we always look at the weather every night. Mm-hmm. So what's the weather look like this week? It's not just because we're pilots, even though that's what everyone thinks. But we're always looking at what the weather's doing and in our future for that week.
The next part of your plan is, where do you meet if you can't meet at home? What's the backup location? And probably what's the backup to the backup location? But if your home was in the impact area, where would you want to meet your family? And if you consider that cell phones and text messaging and email and the internet that we all depend upon 24/7 may not be working, you need to have this planned out in advance. Where are you going to meet with your family to make sure that you can all gather together in the same place?
It's also probably a good idea to let somebody know that maybe doesn't live right next to you what your plan is. Like I said, for my husband and I, it's one thing just to let each other know, but our family may not know where we're at and how we're doing if we're in that area.
The third part of personal preparedness is to practice this plan. So it's kind of like your own personal crisis drill.
Exercise.
We are now evacuating the house.
Yes. Now what? Now where are you going to meet?
Where do we go? We're going to our primary spot.
We all learned this when we were kids and we went through, you know, fire drills in our house and having that designated location.
Here's the rally point.
Exactly.
So you should at least once a year practice the plan with your household, including checking your backup location, backup meeting locations, and your emergency route home to make sure those are still valid. You might have road construction or maybe the road has changed and you need to meet somewhere else or things are different. And then you've got to go back and look at your kit and see, hey, I need fresh batteries. I need to replace some of my first aid supplies because I've used them or they've expired.
I should
refresh my water.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Think of it like you would be checking this in a business organization where you maybe have first aid kits and somebody is responsible for checking those. It's no different than in your house. Make sure that all of your supplies are still working and operational.
Beyond that, those are the three basic things. So have a kit, make a kit, develop a plan, and then practice your plan and go back and review your kit. If you've done all those things and you're starting to think about, okay, I want to go further. Well, you can start with training. You can take the Community Emergency Responder course, the CERT course from FEMA. It's often taught by your local fire department, but it really has to do with how can you help your local community in an emergency. You could take a CPR and first aid training from the Red Cross or from a Red Cross instructor. I think that's probably one of the more valuable things that you can do. You can take an amateur radio course and buy some amateur radio equipment and become part of that network of kind of community folks that coordinate and communicate information. What are some other things that you can do?
Well, I'm just saying if you're a business and you want to train your employees to make sure that they're ready so that they can come back to work because they've taken care of themselves, we'd be happy to come and help with something like that as well.
We do that kind of training. We have done that training for many businesses. We're working on a campaign for that very thing right now.
That's right.
Should keep your car fueled. I'm horrible at this.
You should. You should have at least, what do they say, half a gallon at least always in your car, which I drive excessive amounts to work when I come to work. And I never have the amount of fuel you're supposed to have.
Nope. It's good to also to just look at what are the emergencies that have happened in your area and what's been learned from those. I mean, if you're in a flood zone, you're in a floodplain, you're going to know it because you're going to have flood insurance on your residence, but you should know what that looks like. And you should have an idea of what the city, county, state are going to do in those situations so that you can plan your response.
Right. If anything.
Appropriately.
If you're in a very rural area, like I was growing up in, you know that you're going to be on your own for at least a couple of days after something like that. So
you should assume you're going to be on your own for 3 days.
Yep. At least.
That's the minimum amount of time before help should be available.
Exactly. And I think also having that plan with your neighbors, potentially in that area, because you can help each other out with that type of thing is a good idea. I know we did that growing up as well.
So the beginning of this year, I think my wife and I started talking more about personal preparedness. And you would think, both of us being crisis management folks, that we would be better at this, and we're not. But we've done a lot over the last 6 months, I think, to be a little more in line with where we need to be. For this. It helps having an office where we can store some things. Now, I mean, we would probably come here if something happened as a starting point. This is not far from our home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this would be a good option, minus the windows. Yeah. But it's a good rally point that you or your neighbors or your friends could potentially use to get accountability.
Right. So for more information, you can go to ready.gov. To the Ready Campaign website, there are plan templates and kit instructions and other things there that are useful to you for resources. We also have a blog post on our blog, 4 steps that you can take today to improve your personal preparedness. And we'll put that in the show notes so that you can take a look. And there also is a list of kit contents and other steps that you can take. But again, make a kit, have a plan, practice your plan. And get some training if you want to go further than that. So we're going to tie this into our next episode, which will be about business preparedness. And we're going to talk a little bit about what happens after a storm and what that means and how this idea of personal preparedness connects into recovering your business when something happens.
Yep.
We'll see you on the next episode.
See you then.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.